San Diego's talk radio leader, 760 KFMB presents It's Your Money and Your Life. For the next hour, Richard Muzio and Joe Vecchio will educate and inform you on matters related to your financial future, your life, and your leisure. Now, with It's Your Money and Your Life, here are Richard and Joe.
All right. Good evening, everybody. My name is Joe Vecchio, your co-host, announcer, and producer, coming to you live from La Valencia Hotel in beautiful La Jolla with 50,000 watts of power. We're heard not just in San Diego County, but Orange County, L.A. County, up the coast of Seattle on a good night, out to the desert, Riverside County, all over the place. And actually on 760KFMB.com as well, we stream there. And time now to introduce the main man of the hour. He's an accomplished marathon runner. He's a CPA extraordinaire. He's a core member of Strategic Trusted Advisors Roundtable, and he's a family office advisor to several high net worth families, and a best-selling author, and his name is Richard Muzio. Richard, good evening. How are you on this beautiful September night?
I'm doing marvelous. It's nice to be in La Jolla where there's not as many tourists, and I can actually get a parking spot.
Well, we get valet parking.
We get complimentary, but usually it's a long line of cars getting over here.
I like the parking. Well, I parked a few blocks away tonight.
Yeah, because you're new to your walking thing.
Well, I need to
walk. You were walking for one of our buddies today. Who was that?
I will, but it's hot La Jolla nights. Hot. It's oat La Jolla nights. But anyway, there's about seven, eight, nine bands playing all over downtown La Jolla tonight. So if you're in the Village, they play till 9 o'clock. Come on by, and then also swing by La Valencia, have a glass of wine or a soft drink, and hear some great music.
Do you want to have a glass of wine right now, Joe?
Well, we're going to get to that too, Richard.
Oh, okay.
Boy, you keep jumping the gun here. We got the Amelia Browning Trio playing down in the lobby tonight.
They're taking a break right now.
Yes, they're taking a break, but. Also today, I did do some walking this morning for our buddy Nathan Fletcher, who is running for mayor, and I think he's got a good shot at being our next mayor. So got to cover him. We'll probably have him on the show here in a few weeks so people can get to know him better. And what's going on with your book and stuff?
Well, I moved up to number 40 on Amazon, personal development. It's been a good week.
So what's your plan?
And I think because the PBS documentary aired Tuesday night, that attracted a lot of attention. You watched that live, right?
I most certainly did.
You contributed to that, didn't you?
I most certainly did. We most certainly contributed to it without our early efforts. You know, we forgot to mention,
Just tell everybody the truth here, Joe. Go ahead.
We tried to. Oh, Richard was a 14 or 15 year old. He turned 15 that summer, and he was working for Bobby Riggs as a scrapbook maker. Kept his thousands of 2,500 pages of press clippings and scrapbooks, and wound up going to all the matches and everything else. But the thing is that when I met you in September of 2011, you told me all these backstories about Margaret Court and the match in Ramona here, and I said, gosh, someone really needs to do a movie. So I made a phone call to Billie Jean King's office. Let's just cut to the chase here. And we got through to her partner there. And she said, well, it's really not on our radar, but if you want to go for it, you know, keep us posted. And we actually were trying to fundraise and get directors, et cetera, et cetera. And then I wrote the treatment. You told me to read that book, A Necessary Spectacle. And I wrote a 6-page treatment. And finally, she said, well, Billie Jean's in the loop on this now. So, you know, and we stepped aside. And the result was that great piece on PBS.
Yeah, great reviews. LA Times had a great review. New York, I mean, well, great reviews all over the place for that documentary. The documentary is more of Billie Jean King's biography. First time American Masters on PBS has ever done a sports personality,
and it is online now on PBS American Masters website, so for all eternity you can go there and see it anytime.
And 100% of the Margaret Court versus Bobby Riggs Mother's Day Massacre footage is the footage that I found after it was believed to have been lost 40 years ago. So we actually rescued a piece of American history that was believed to have been lost 40 years ago, the iconic handing over of the 12 red roses and Margaret's curtsy,
right,
is now forever captured on film. So we were able to find that great accomplishment.
Of course, all they really remember is that Bobby Riggs and what a male chauvinist pig he pretended to be. He really wasn't. He didn't believe all that stuff. He was, like he told Billie Jean, I'm only in it for the money, honey. But
he was a capitalist. He was a capitalist.
Yes, he was. Anyway, we have also in our
Let's make some money for La Vie.
Our La Vie studio. We have the wine director with us again, Tammy Wong. Always a pleasure to see you, Tammy. How are you tonight?
It is such a pleasure to be here. Thank you for having me. It is a wonderful, wonderful time here at La Vie. We're so excited. We've got Restaurant Week. We even started a day early. It officially starts tomorrow. But
Beatles did a song, 8 days a week. That was a Beatles song, 8 days a week.
Exactly. So I brought up one of my very favorite wines. It's the Domaine de Pouble Beaujolais, which is from the southern region of France. And I love to drink it in the fall. It's a light red. I put a little bit of chill on it. It's got medium body and medium tannin, so it's really friendly with whatever dinner you want to serve, whether you want fish or light meat or whatever you want. And we are featuring this one. Oh, it's organic too, which is cool. That matters.
I love that.
And we're featuring it as our second course optional wine pairing for our Restaurant Week offerings this week. So we've got some really delicious stuff. I tried the top sirloin. That's one of the entree choices today, and it's spectacular.
Yeah.
As is.
When you say organic, that means no bisulfites, though? Because
they add a little bit of they use a natural sulfur in winemaking, and they use a little bit, and the more natural a winemaker you are, the less you use.
Okay.
But it's really necessary because wine will go bad. They farm it organically. They don't use any pesticides or herbicides.
Good.
And they try to encourage beneficial pests and ground cover and stuff like that to help the vines do their own thing and fight the pests on their own.
And this vineyard is located where?
It's in France.
In France.
In Beaujolais. It's the southern part of Burgundy.
This is the real deal, folks.
It is the real deal. Another exciting thing that we're doing.
I'm taking a sip right now.
Please enjoy.
Great, so.
We're excited. We have a captain's list. It's your life and your money. So if you like to wine in your life and you like to save money, we have a number of things that we're clearing out of our cellar so that we can make room for new stuff. We're really excited about Cafe Leroux opening, and our 300-bottle wine vault is going to be opening.
In mid-October.
But on our captain's list, we have a number of really great things, including some Grand Cru Burgundies from the mid-90s at price just over wholesale. So if you like to drink wine, you should come here and drink it here.
It's your money and your life and your wine.
And your life with your wine.
Wonderful. Well, thanks, Tammy. And
thank
then what
you.
About the big the
Heavenly Hog Pig Out?
Yes.
We're so excited. I believe there are a few tickets left. It's Friday, October 11th. 9 different chefs from around San Diego are coming, and they're each getting a part of the pig that will be that is still alive at Cook's Pig Farm in Julian.
Days are numbered.
And days are numbered. Not too many left. He's eating avocados and chestnuts, I believe, right now. So they're finished off on the
macadamia nuts. Yeah.
Okay. And
all the food waste here goes out to the farm to feed the pigs. Right?
Yeah, So we save all our vegetable clippings,
kind of
and they go
circle of life.
Exactly,
that's good.
Exactly,
that's
making the circle.
Wonderful. Well, Tammy, thanks so very much.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah.
Restaurant Week goes through Saturday or Sunday of next weekend.
Sunday.
Sunday. Okay.
Sunday.
Wonderful.
Perfect.
Wonderful.
The 22nd.
Wonderful. Excellent.
Come see us.
And Chef Dan Barron is going to. Be leading the charge on the Heavenly Hog Night, right?
Yes, yes. Okay. We are hosting the festivities that evening.
Wonderful, wonderful, wonderful. All right, folks. Well, you can always go to lavalencia.com, right?
Correct.
And to find out more and how, and how to...
Facebook, Twitter, all that stuff.
Only a few tickets left, and they're not inexpensive, but it's well worth it, right?
Well, for 9 courses of pig with beer and wine pairings, it's
right.
Well worth it.
You're getting gourmet stuff all the way down the line.
Yes, if you like to eat, you should be there.
Great. Thank you so much, Tim.
Thank you.
Appreciate you.
Have a great show.
Thanks.
Yes, so.
I'll try to keep Joe well-behaved here.
Yes.
I'm going to pour him a little wine, maybe.
There we go. Okay, wonderful. And, Richard, we have
a guest.
A regular guest in
this,
studio
this could have
tonight.
Gone on forever, but we have to do our guest justice. Mr. John Espinosa Nelson, who, like me, is an author. John, welcome. Your book just released on Thursday, right?
It did, yes. Thank you for having me.
It's going to be fun. You're really in for, a busy life if your book released on Thursday.
So far, yes.
Well, the name of the book is Where Excuses Go to Die, and John was known once upon a time as the bookstore bandit in the 1990s and had quite an illustrious career, and he's turned his life around and become quite sensational as an author and a lot of other things I can see on your resume here. So anyway, born and raised where, John?
Actually born on an army base in Germany. Raised in Los Angeles.
Okay, now we got to tell this backstory about you because you've got a connection to some of our previous guests.
Uh-huh.
Who was your grandfather?
My grandfather was an engineer producer for Gene Autry. Worked for him engineering and producing Angel Games from the time that he bought the team in 61 mm-hmm. until his death in 1998.
Mm-hmm. Because we've had on our show Dick Enberg, who was Don Drysdale's broadcast partner with the California Angels. And we've had on our show Ann Myers Drysdale, who is the wife, the widow of the late Don Drysdale.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're in august company. You're following august company. But we definitely have a Gene Autry connection going on with the show, apparently.
Yes.
And that's really interesting. So you were known, or you are known, as the Bookstore Bandit. You started robbing bookstores when you were how old?
23.
23. Did you like to read, or did you like stealing cash?
I did like to read, yes. I still like to read.
We should get into his background and how you came to decide that that's something you wanted to try to do.
But I wanted to clarify that that's what he did before
right,
he...
Right.
Yeah.
So
tell us, what goes through somebody's head that makes them want to be a bookstore bandit?
You had a pretty conventional upbringing, correct, with rather conservative parents and with high moral values and all that, right? So
yes. It was definitely... grades and report cards on mm-hmm. Monday morning and church mm-hmm. on Sunday. And mm-hmm. it was a middle class background. My father worked in the entertainment industry and television. My mother was an educator. They're both retired. I have two brothers. We were all raised in a Catholic household.
Mm-hmm.
And my actions were very contrary to that upbringing, to putting it lightly. By the time I was 23 years old, I was what I like to call ethically spoiled.
Mm-hmm.
You couldn't tell me anything. Mm-hmm. I had all the answers. None of the rules applied to me. And I thought it was a good idea to commit a few crimes. And unfortunately, that was set some actions and some choices in motion that landed me behind bars.
So did that happen at 23, or did you show signs that you might be inclined to behave this way, like in high school, junior high school, college? I'm just curious.
Well,
I mean, you're obviously very bright. Were you one of those bright students who sort of goofed off in school?
Perhaps too bright for my own good.
Did your peers, were they more of the delinquent type, or is this something you did as a singular
aberrational act?
Yeah, so you just decided. But you don't wake up at age 24 one day and said, hey, you know, you're having a conventional life and, you know, going to wake up work and everything, doing everything by the book, and then just... one day say I'm going to rob a bank. So there must have been something in your development that made you want to rebel. Were you kind of rebellious or something?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. I was rebellious, and I was a manipulative mm-hmm. juvenile.
Was there any substance abuse issues going on at all?
Beyond experimentation, sometimes heavier than others, no.
Okay. All right.
So how many bookstores did you rob?
Well, let's get to the first
one. Well, I'm a CPA. I want to know some numbers.
Fair enough. I had some friends that worked at a couple of bookstores.
Okay.
One in particular that I hung out at a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I would sit in the aisles as a kid with my mom in bookstores. I loved bookstores. I spent a lot of time reading. When I was in high school, I would take the bus to this bookstore where some friends were hanging out.
This was in L.A. somewhere?
This was in Los Angeles,
okay.
Yeah. And I picked up a lot of information inadvertently over the course of waiting for my friends to get off work so we could go to a movie or whatever. Things like when the deposit was taken and picked up, dropped off, put in the safe, pulled out of the registers, counted, etc.
Now, were you working a job or going to school or anything at this point, or were you kind of just...
I was just out of high school.
Okay.
I was just out of high school, and I was, at that time... unemployed. It was about the year before I graduated, and then a little after graduation.
Okay.
And we hung out at this bookstore for quite some time. And there was one evening when we were all hanging out at one of the manager's apartments, mm-hmm. and one of the other employees came in from a shift saying that they had been robbed, that the store had been robbed.
Mm.
And somebody handed her a beer and said, "Tell the story." And she told the story of a guy who ran in there with a gun, waving it around, "Give me the money." And she said, "I can't stand this company. I can't stand the manager."
Hmm.
And I gave him everything in the drawer. And then I opened up the next drawer and gave him everything and said,
"Wow,
have a nice night." And if it happened again, I would do it again.
Wow.
Now, we all thought that was a funny story at the time. I didn't really think much of it after that until about 5 years later when I was sort of I'd gotten myself into some financial straits.
Mm-hmm.
I was hanging around with some people that had a lot more money than I did,
mm-hmm.
and I needed to keep up.
Mm-hmm.
And there was this sudden rush of information about how I could get some cash quickly by walking into a bookstore with a fake movie prop 38 revolver tucked into my pants and pulling my T-shirt tight behind my back to reveal the shape of the of the fake weapon and politely explaining, hey, look, nothing personal, just want to get the cash and be on my way.
Speaking of cash, though, John, can you hold that thought?
Sure.
Dan, we've got to take a break right here, don't we? So we'll be right back with more of It's Your Money and Your Life. And talking
live
about,
from La Vie.
You're right. More about the bookstore bandit. Hang on. All right, we are back with It's Your Money and Your Life, live from La Vie, La Valencia, with our guest, the bookstore bandit, John Nelson, and Richard Musio, CPA, and myself. So welcome back, gentlemen. So where we last left off was the fake 38.
Fake 38.
Walking into the bookstore. This is when you had the epiphany that you want to keep up and get some free money.
Yes, I had basically worked it up in my mind that if I followed in the footsteps of that story that I had mentioned where the girl just was apathetic and didn't care, didn't like her job, that the implication, the credentials, if you will, would do the work for me, because I pretty much knew that whoever was behind the counter when I walked in there would be roughly my age and not want to be there watching a clock, couldn't wait to get out of there. So I, that very first night.
Now, this is the bookstore that, did they know you personally?
No.
This is not the bookstore that you hung around. This was several years later.
Oh, okay. All of that information I picked up that I mentioned earlier had remained somewhat dormant.
Because talk about an easy ID. I mean, if you're...
Well, of course, of course. But also, this was something that was you know, planned over a little period of time.
Okay. So, this was the night...
So I walked in and basically said, like I mentioned, no offense, I just want to get some, you know, nothing about you and me, and it's not your money, don't worry about it. I didn't even have to get that far before the money was going into a bag.
Really?
And I then...
You showed her the gun, right?
I didn't. I just pulled my T-shirt tight behind my back to show the handle.
Really?
I never removed it once.
Wow.
It wasn't about, you know, power. It wasn't about bullying somebody.
Did she say, what are you doing for dinner later?
Well, actually, one individual behind the register at one point during one of these exchanges, if you will, asked me where the party would be. This was well into my spree, which was roughly 6 months and amounted to about 42 to 45 robberies.
Oh, my Lord.
So you walked out with some cash. Did you take any books?
I did.
What did you take in terms of books?
Honestly, I don't remember what the titles were, but you know, I was in the aisle and looking at the register.
I bet he took Abby Hoffman's book. Remember that?
Yeah.
Steal This Book.
Yeah, Steal This Book.
Funny that you mentioned that, because I had already, I did have that book, but I didn't steal it.
Anyway, so 42 robberies in bookstores, and then what?
Well, the last five were federally insured banks.
Okay.
And on the very last one, a very, very crafty teller dropped in a big stack of $100 bills. See, I had gotten a bit big for my britches, if you will, and decided I was going to try for a bigger game.
Now, you never
You went from a bookstore to a bank. You didn't do like something in the middle, like you know, a big grocery store or something.
Well, actually, pharmaceutical chains, pharmacies. What I had discovered when I was hanging out with my friends was that the bank, the store safe was always open at the same time, and the truck came, and the cashier, and the deposit, all that stuff had a certain time that it happened. This was just information that stayed in my head. And then after a few of these incidents, I realized that there were many other large chains that have that exact same template as to when the safes are open and the registers are counted, etc.
Now, was it always a fake gun, or did you ever get a real gun?
No, I never had never.
And you never pulled it, ever pulled it, never?
No, it wasn't about bullying anybody or threatening.
Yeah. Some people need to be convinced.
It was a lot dumber than that. Yeah. I mean, it wasn't. I didn't have a need to show somebody how small they were. It was just entitled, immature, and illegal thinking that you know.
Did you just walk up and say, look, I have a gun, and I'm here to rob you?
No, I just walked up and pulled my T-shirt tight behind my back and showed the butt of the movie prop 38, and they went into what they're apparently, you know, and again, something else I counted on, their training.
Oh, my God.
Managerial staff trains the employees to react accordingly, and I gambled everything on that exact routine.
You're lucky nobody had a real gun.
Yeah, I am very lucky.
Yeah, you couldn't pull this off in Arizona.
I'm lucky for a lot more reasons than that.
Was there a lot of camera surveillance then? Because now there is.
Almost none. It was at a time when that was just beginning to become a reality.
Because today, forget about it. I mean, they're going to get you.
Of course,
they got the you know, the Boston Marathon people. I mean, that's incredible. Yeah. So they'll get you if they want. But anyway, so that's interesting. No words exchanged. Just
very few. There was one incident during a Christmas rush. Where the phone kept ringing, distracting the employee who was helping me during our thing, and I had to answer the phone for him.
Call back later.
There was a robbery in progress. Employee on the other side, and she wanted to know where her order
You're
was.
Calling it a bad time.
What was the name of that Woody Allen movie? I have a gub. Give me.
Yes.
No,
take
that's
the money
gun. No, take the money and run. Yeah. No, that's a B. And then he'd ask all the staff at the bank. Is that an N or a B?
Yeah.
Take the money and run. That's a good movie.
But anyway, so you got on the 42nd attempt, someone put the stack of hundreds with the purple
dye pack, which went off in my pocket as I was calmly walking to the 65 Lincoln Continental that I purchased with stolen money.
So that was what number bank robbery?
That was, I think, about well, it was four, number five of five. The banks.
Okay, mm-hmm. The banks.
Roughly 42 or 45 robberies total that I pulled off. I walked out of the bank, and about 50, 60 feet later, going around the corner, walking calmly to my car, the dye pack exploded. It sent a big fuchsia, a plume of smoke up into my face. It was filled with CS gas, the riot gas. The money went blew out all over the sidewalk and took my car keys with it.
Wow.
When I ran back to the car, I didn't have the keys. And I look like a big pink Vegas showgirl.
Wow.
With this smoke.
Wow.
And money wafting out of my pants. And
let's just hold that thought right there, because we've got to take another break right now. Coming up, Dan, are you there? All right, let's go to our break, and we'll come back with more of this wonderful story with the bookstore bandit right after this. All right, we're back to the second half of It's Your Money in Your Life. Over to Richard to thank our sponsors.
Thank you to lovely La Vie, La Valencia Hotel. Couldn't do it here unless you guys let us in the front door, so thank you very much. Exciting week, though, restaurant week. I'm going to come over a couple of times. The food here is incredible.
And thanks to Mark DiBella, managing director.
Yeah, and we're keeping your office nice and neat, Mark. Don't worry.
Mm-hmm.
UBS, just down the street, our major sponsor. UBS with Mr. Michael Caronta and Drew Freitas. We've got a great show with them coming up in a couple of weeks about sustainability. One of our favorite topics. Rich Gaines with Family Legacy Legal. He's got his big event coming up on September 18th. FamilyLegacyLegal.com if you want to go learn how to have a much more successful business. I believe that's September 18th going from memory. Joel Grushkin with Cost Segregation Initiatives, helping real estate owners improve their cash flow. Our new daddy, Jason Kruger with Signature Analytics, the best CFO business here in San Diego. Carl Sheeler with Business Valuations Limited. Carl is always one of our biggest and best supporters, and he's been very busy with some valuation work I've been sending him. It must be getting late in the year, and people are giving things away. Our favorite CPAs on the planet trying to make it through September 16th, Monday Alive, with extensions. Paul Polito and Don Epic CPAs, Polito Epic CPAs in Vista. And last but certainly not least, right across the street from the lovely La Valencia Hotel and UBS is Regents Bank, Mr. Sean Puckett, Mr. Steve Sefton. Thank you to all of our sponsors. We couldn't do it without you. Great group of businesses and people that we've been working with for many, many years. And Joe, our listeners can find out more about our sponsors where?
If they fire up their computer or smartphone or whatever they're using and go on to iymoney.com, www.iymoney.com. There is a sponsors tab there. Just click there. All the sponsors Richard just mentioned are there with their personal contact information, their bios, and everything else. And they're all good colleagues with a history of working with you for many, many years. Right?
Too many years. But you can also go there to buy my book, but you can't go there to buy John's book. To buy John's book, you have to go to whereexcusesgotodie.com.
Or Amazon. Amazon, probably.
Or Amazon.com,
anywhere
I'm
books
sure.
are sold, including bookstores.
where you don't hang out too much anymore, right?
But getting back to the story.
Right. So he gets caught. The plume of smoke.
He gets caught. So, but you don't seem like a very arrogant guy or anything. So talk just about what happened since, because you obviously have paid your dues, right?
Well, I was sentenced to 8 years in California State Prison. I did 4 years.
Okay.
I was... you know, after that period of time, I took advantage of some friends that hadn't let go of the rope, and I got some work as an electrician on movie sets and hung some lights and kept that going for a while, and then I was submitting short stories here and there, trying to get the writing thing going. And that was a direct result of some civilian employees that had seen some potential in me that I didn't see for myself when I was locked up, some civilian educators who encouraged me to write, and they thought I had a talent.
Where were you locked up? Which institution?
A variety of institutions, actually. They moved me around a lot, one of them being Folsom Prison. That was an interesting place to learn to play harmonica, which I did. not well. But there's a lot of competition there, so you don't want to be too flashy.
Right.
Somebody might want to upstage you but not use a harmonica to do it. I was fortunate enough to have a lot of people that I encountered believe in me, and it was an ad hoc accidental rehabilitation that I was lucky enough to experience in a very, very crowded negative environment.
Mm-hmm.
But more importantly, when I came home, my family and friends gave me plenty of opportunities for me to help myself.
Mm.
And one of those opportunities was to continue my goal to become a writer and to get this story told.
Mm. So did you start thinking about writing while in prison, or was that in your mind before that, when you were robbing banks and bookstores, or when did that?
Never seriously.
No, okay.
And when I was incarcerated, I took some creative writing classes and made some friends in that world with some UCLA Extension instructors who came to teach, and a few in particular were instrumental in helping me find a voice and to finally have something in life to apply myself to and to fight for.
So, you know, this is actually, they talk about rehabilitation not working on many times, but here's a great case where it has worked, right? Right, John?
As a result of people that were willing to give of their time and not let go of the rope.
Yeah.
Yeah, we have to put the disclaimer at the bottom of the radio show, which is hard to see because you can't see the radio show. Don't try this at home. Don't rob bookstores and don't rob banks.
Right.
But the name of your book, John, is Where Excuses Go to Die. So you write about excuses.
I do. Well, I specifically write about getting into that environment and waking up and becoming a man and taking responsibility for myself and learning personal accountability, but also, and most importantly, that, you know, when you're surrounded by excuses, what are yours worth?
Mm-hmm.
Nothing.
Mm-hmm. So here's a question. Are most people surrounded by excuses, or just very few people?
No, we all are.
We all are.
I'm pretty sure we all are.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And so when you were growing up, you were making excuses, but you probably didn't really realize you were doing it. What were your favorite excuses?
Oh, they were all mostly having to do with a sense of entitlement. You know, I would always play my parents against each other when I was growing up. They were hardworking people, and I took advantage of the fact that they were gone a lot and that we were partially raised by a couple of uncles, and my grandmother did the best she could getting us to and from school. And, you know, I was a manipulative kid, and those traits turned into juvenile habits, and those juvenile habits turned into adult character. And by the time I was 23, as I said in the opener, I was ethically spoiled. I was a nightmare.
Mm-hmm.
And I just, none of the rules applied to me.
Did you have any resentment for your parents for not catching this going on with you, or do you just went on and did your own thing?
No, certainly not, because, you know, on the one hand, this is what it took. You know, it wasn't until I completed a prison sentence that I ever started or finished anything in my life.
Mm.
And it was during that process.
Only because you had to.
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, I'm sorry to have to say that. That's unfortunate. Nobody wants to, you know, admit that. But, had it not been for that sense of completion, the creation of a relationship and the maintaining of a relationship with delayed gratification, I wouldn't be here.
Hmm. So what are examples of some very common excuses that people tend to make, if we can generalize?
I didn't do it.
Okay.
I would say that's probably, you know, we're trained in society from a young age to not be the person that made the mistake.
Mm-hmm.
We'd rather look better than look like the person that made the mistake and then learn from it.
This goes on in politics a lot, though. You hear there's
you mean George Bush?
What?
George Bush and Mr. Tenet?
Remember they asked him, did you ever make a mistake?
Throw him under the
bus. I have a list here. We can go on a list.
But, I know,
for example, incidents of people, you know, bumping into other people's cars and not leaving notes, you know. I mean, it's like epidemic, right?
Well, bumping into human beings and driving away.
Yeah, hit and runs.
And you're always told, never admit liability, never say it's your fault, never, right? People are trained to do this.
We would rather be the guy that didn't make the mistake than the one that learns from the mistakes we admit to.
So taking ownership. So when did you start writing the book?
I actually started reading directly from a journal that I kept while I was incarcerated. Mm-hmm. When I came home, I had to take some time to get away from it, and mm-hmm. I hung some lights on some movie sets. And when I came back to it, it was to read from my journal at some coffee houses, mm-hmm. you know, and open mic nights, things
Very
like
cool.
that. And people laughed, and they thought it was funny, and they didn't expect mm-hmm. to be laughing about that kind of an environment. Mm-hmm. And video producer doing rock videos, a friend of mine said, you have to stop reading this for your friends and take it seriously and write the book.
Huh.
Well,
this was how long ago?
This was in 1999.
Okay.
And so, unfortunately, as I was about midway through the second or third iteration, I got hit by a car.
Mm.
The guy drove away.
He didn't do it.
Oh, he didn't do it. And I spent the time in recovery really getting down to business. And then right about 2007, just dedicated everything I had to making sure that this was the very best that it could be. And what I had found out in the process of writing this book was that I had to become the kind of person that could tell it in a meaningful way. And
so the main goal is to try to enlighten other people to take ownership for yourself
absolutely own my life, own my mistakes, be that person, and along the way, if I can change how people recognize that particular environment, mm-hmm. then maybe I can change the way that we see that environment in general in terms of rehabilitation. Mm-hmm. Our tax dollars, for example, going towards education and not just buying bigger locks.
Mm-hmm. There you go.
Yeah, that's an interesting comment. I mean, I know in my business...
Bigger locks for our prison, I mean.
Yeah, bigger, I know what you mean. In my business, we tell people you're not going to learn unless you make mistakes. Now, obviously, your mistakes were somewhat egregious, robbing banks and so on, but I've always been amazed by people who are afraid to make mistakes because, in my mind, it suggests they're not open to learning.
Well, if I don't take a break right now, I'll be making a mistake, Richard. So why don't we take a break right there?
It's your money and your life, live from La B.
Yeah, stay tuned. We'll be right back. Hang on. All right, we're back in the home stretch of It's Your Money and Your Life with our guest, John Nelson, the bookstore Bannard, whose book is Where Excuses Go to Die. His website is www.whereexcusesgotodie.com. And what would we like to talk about in this last segment, John? Maybe a funny story from being incarcerated or writing speeches for, who was that, the sheriff? Or?
That was Lee Baca and Michael Corona.
So they must have realized you had some writing skills.
Well, the producer that
Talk
hired
about going full circle.
Yeah,
huh?
Yeah, really, yeah. Literally. That was not something that I expected. But there were certain opportunities that were open to me as I submitted my writing to, you know, different people and made a couple of connections here and there. This is while I'm hanging lights.
This is the sheriff of San Diego County? Is that L.A. County?
Orange County. He's currently incarcerated. It might have been a curse.
The sheriff?
In fact, a lot of the people that I wrote for
the former
went
sheriff?
On to be indicted or jailed.
Wow. What did they get in trouble?
My Corona?
Yeah.
I think,
refresh me.
I could've... tried to influence a witness.
Really?
In federal court. That was...
That's not legal. What was his excuse?
No excuse for that.
Again, I didn't do it.
Yeah, I didn't do it.
And the other one, Lee Baca, too, is...
Lee Baca, yeah. I had written some teleprompter dialogue.
Is he in jail, too?
No.
Okay.
No, he's not. Well, it's arguable about whether or not he's going to become the sheriff again. But
gotcha. Interesting. Huh.
So how long did you work on the book seriously, though? I mean, in terms of... when you really, really started. How many years?
5 years.
5 years?
5 years nonstop.
Was it hard?
Writing and rewriting and writing and rewriting. Yeah, it was. It was because I was unfortunately having to go over a lot of, you know, I dragged my family down this rabbit hole of incarceration with me. And when I did, mm-hmm. I hurt a lot of family and friends.
Mm.
I had to contend with that. And I did that through writing. And when I got there, you know, to prison, I wrote a lot of letters home to family and friends, and I wrote things that I thought were funny to try to lift myself out of mm-hmm. it, to try to tell myself and them that I was going to be okay. And that became the basis for my journal, which became the basis for the book. And so in revisiting those very dark days, you know, it was a tough slog to get.
Did anybody say, don't put me in the book? Just curious.
Actually, no.
That's good.
So the book must have had a healing process, and then you've probably patched up a lot of differences with family, I would hope, right? Has that happened?
It has, fortunately. Yeah, fortunately, I've been very lucky, mostly because of my own actions, mm-hmm. having turned things around, mm-hmm. you know.
So what specific steps can people take so that there's less excuse-making in the world? or on this planet, or individually?
Not being afraid to own the mistakes that you make, number one, because they're great ways to learn who you are, what you are, what you're made of, from childhood to, you know, teenagers and adults.
You know, I'm hearing about this current young generation. I don't know about if you've got young daughters.
Yeah, I've got three of them.
You keep hearing sense of entitlement with these the younger generation. And are you speaking in any schools at all to try to open these kids' eyes a little bit? Or?
We're actually lining those dates up now.
That's great.
You're shooting for high schools, junior highs? I mean, what age do you think is the critical age to get this message out to?
I would say from about age 9 up, 9 and 10, real early.
Mm-hmm.
Real early.
Yeah.
Because, you know, excuses are our worst enemies, but they're also our best friends, because we don't know not to make excuses until we realize they're not going to help us. They're not going to do anything except...
Because we've all seen the scared straight thing, and I can't really relate to, a murderer or anything like that, but, you know, you look like a normal, average guy. Like, if it could happen to you, you know, I'm a youngster sitting in school, and I've got... this attitude.
And that's just the thing with the number of people that are incarcerated in the United States now. Prison is no longer just for those people.
Yeah.
You know, everybody's close to, if doesn't have a family parolee in one way or another, or knows somebody that has a son or a daughter.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's the one thing that I've learned from, you know, there's a lot of people that have had family members make big mistakes. And, you know, there's a great need for prison reform and rehabilitation and education and an emphasis on reentry issues.
Yeah.
You know.
So the book, how's it broken down? Like the first third is the whole background on, you know, building up to the robberies and pulling them off, and then your prison life, and then post prison, and then some your epiphanies.
Very standard. You just said it all. That's
okay.
Exactly right.
Great.
That's exactly right.
Perfect.
So what's the greatest epiphany that came out of it? Is there one greatest one, or are there a multitude?
There are many more than I can count.
Okay.
You know, and in reading the book, I would bet that readers won't get past page 50 without five or six in the bucket. There are just a number of things, not just that I experienced, but that I saw other people experience and that I saw other people learn that I wanted to get across.
This is like Holden Caulfield goes to jail, I think. It's probably kids.
Thank you very much. That's a big compliment.
Catcher in the Rye, but
Catcher in the Rye.
A different form of
didn't
it.
Didn't Salinger stop writing? No, he didn't stop writing after that. He stopped publishing.
Arguably, he may have stopped being good.
Yeah, that could be. That could very well be.
The war triggered his book. You know, he was writing that when he was over in the war. But more, there's a movie coming out about him too.
That's what I heard. But so John, let me ask you a question. I know individuals make excuses, but sometimes larger groups of people or societies make excuses. Isn't that a little bit more of a difficult challenge to fix when you have large groups of people who sort of look the other way and make excuses?
Yes, it is. And to be honest with you, large groups of people are a little bit above my pay grade. I'd rather have a conversation with a young man or a young woman.
Understood.
About the mistakes that live in their lives and that, you know, make it difficult to grow now.
Well, Richard, you bring to mind the Holocaust. I mean,
Well, that's the first thing that comes
German
to mind.
Society back then, how could they have all excused what was going on? I guess you get people in enough desperate situations or whatever. You know, anything can happen, but...
I guess why I'm asking that, I've noticed this interesting phenomenon now that we're a totally electronic age. People used to be able to offend people to other people's faces because that was the only way to do it, but now everybody's able to offend people somewhat anonymously.
Mm-hmm.
And it's almost like there's this group think kind of thing going on.
Well, that gets into the bullying and
yeah,
such.
Which is cyberbullying and all those things.
Yeah.
And that really concerns me because it's become almost impersonal or secret. You can now make people's lives miserable. Nobody even knows who you are.
Without consequence.
Consequence, right?
Yeah.
Whereas if an individual's making mistakes, they usually found out one way or another. So that's a real interesting, challenge for me.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, we should really wrap it up right there, Richard, because we are in the home stretch.
Again,
where excuses go to die.com. And Richard's book, SoWhat'sYourPlay.com, and our show, iymoney.com. You can get all the podcasts, even the great show we had last week with Billie Jean King. But,
John, you spending the night here at La Vie?
I am.
Excellent. You're going to have fun.
He's loving it. Anyway, hot La Jolla nights. Get out there and enjoy the live music, folks. It's out there till 9 o'clock tonight. Get over to La Valencia. And we'd like to thank Dan Noon, our sound engineer in the studio, for making us sound great. Thanks to Craig Blank, our con executive. And thanks to Dave Smith, our programming genius. You have a wonderful
Tammy
week.
For the wine, Joe. How
oh,
could you
and
forget?
Tammy,
and John, thanks for coming in. Fascinating discussion.
Thank yes, you very sir, much.
Everybody buy the book out
you got
this
it.
Past Thursday.
You got it. Okay, have a great week, everybody. We'll be back next week with more. You stay tuned then, and we'll talk to you next Saturday night. Good night.